Hello, excuse me, and welcome to Darker Corners, the best and only Justice League Dark show. This is episode 6. I'm the host, Nick Antoine. Still getting it. Alright, you're going to have to excuse the sound of multiple fans going because where I live it might as well be hell. Not because it sucks, it's actually pretty awesome. It's just the temperature lately has been quite hot, but it is the summer, so what are you going to do? As far as anyone is concerned, it's June. To you late listeners, all of you early adopters, you know that this is a part of a very weird rollout, very special treat. Old business, how are you? Is everything okay? You getting enough sleep? Getting enough to eat? New business. The central server is listening. Specifically, CS Terminal is reading your tweets. It is very pleased with you. Justice League Dark number 6. In the Dark. Post-mortem. The Bloody Reunion. Written by Peter Milligan. Art and cover by Michael Janin. Colors by Ulysses Arreola. Arreola. Still can't get it right. No offense. Lettered by Rob Lee. The associate editor was Chris Conroy. No relation to Kevin Conroy, I don't think. And the editor was Matt Idelson. This is clearly, as stated, kind of wrapping things up after the previous couple of issues. With this team that have been brought together by Madame Xanadu, they're now, you know, having to go up against the Green Witch. It was an interesting little arc going on. A little arc, it was 5 issues long. It dealt with some pretty bizarre issues, which end up getting delved back into in this particular issue. Even though it's spread out over the course of a couple of different pages over the course of a couple months that it was released, for instance, and I guess really the main one is Shade Changing Man, Rack Shade. Taken aback by it, like I said before, read the series when it was coming out, well, it's still coming out monthly, but when it first came out, I was reading it, and for whatever reason, I think I was focusing more on Dead Man and eventually Alec Holland. Not for any particular reason. I think it was just familiarity's sake. For some reason, I remember seeing Dead Man, and I feel like Justice League Unlimited when I was younger, but I'm probably wrong because that's a very, very bold concept to jump down. I was surprised they did the question. And Rene Montoya, all that stuff. But yeah, no, it's very intriguing going back over this stuff, and I, you know, I said it before, I highly recommend people doing that, all of you guys. Even if this is your first time reading it and then you listen to this particular podcast, go read it again, and not right away. Wait a couple weeks, let life happen to you. You know, go and do a bunch of stuff that makes you think about everything but this, and then come back to it, and you'll be surprised the point of view you get. I think it helps to see where not only the artist is coming from when you look at all these individual panels, but the writer, you know, and I guess everyone involved with each of these issues, every single panel, you know, all kinds of stuff happens to them, and at the end of the day, this is just a job for them, not for me. This is a service to the public, and every now and again, you'll find people that are doing a job and don't look at it as a job, but actually see it as, you know, their dream, their passion, something that they're banging out out of love, and you definitely see that in the graphic novel industry. So pay attention to that. You know, when people are like, oh, I got to get up from my 9-to-5, these people get up to start drawing and creating and shaping these bizarre, bizarre worlds. That being said, Rack Shade, the Changing Man, has some deep issues, and I don't know if that's something that extends to before the Flashpoint or not, but it's definitely very, very, very bizarre, and something that I'm hoping ends up getting explored more later on. Like I said, read these before, but it's kind of a rediscovery going over these for each issue, seeing once again what was trying to be conveyed by all these different artists. So you see him wrestling in with the problems of the power that he's been given, you know, kind of going on that old maxim by now. But it's done in a very adult way. It seems that way to me. I feel like if a child were to read this once, twice, three, four times, which they shouldn't, children should not be reading these. Not these issues. Especially listening to these podcasts. If you're under... 16, society sees it 16, technically you're under 16, you're a child, even though a minor is 18. There's a lot of really smart people at 17 and 18. Some. Most are still teenagers in high school, but some of them are geniuses, and that's why they get put in AP classes and thrown into college. A lot of the inspiration for Doogie Howser, MD. But if it was my opinion, I'd say you shouldn't be reading these until you're at least 24, 25 years old. Any of the issues that get covered in this podcast or in Constant Tone, you gotta have some tragedies under your belt to understand the motivations as to why these stories are being told the way that they are. There's clearly some stuff that went down in Hawk and Dove, which I've just never even gotten into in the New 52. I saw some of it in Brightest Day, because I think the Blackest Night series was mostly in space, if I'm not mistaken. The Sinestro Corps War, which was most, you know, all space, until it got back to where it got back to, trying not to spoil stuff. And then Blackest Night, if I'm not mistaken, was mostly space, and then started centering around the, I guess you could say, the keystone of the DC multiverse. And then Brightest Day seemed to be a lot more ground-centric. And that's when I started becoming a little bit more introduced to Deadman, and then as well Hawk and Dove and their role in the Brightest Day series. Clearly something went down. it kind of gets talked about on the page, but I really have no point of reference for it. I would assume, given what's been going on in these last couple issues, that Deadman and Dove have been involved in one way, shape, or form. But given the events of what's been going on over the last five issues, it's kind of cleared up any need to go more into that backstory and kind of just bring these strands even closer together, intertwining them into a bizarre graphic novel rope. It seems here that this is, unless I'm mistaken, because fictional time travel is very possible. And fact-based time travel, as far as we know, is not yet achievable. Time has lapsed. Life has occurred. As I've been mentioning before, you know, involved in directing a movie, and it takes up some time, and that's very important to me. These are important to me as well, but it's not creating anything. I'm just conversing about, you know, into the digital ether about how awesome these things are. But the thing that actually helps make me feel better as a human being, being creative, that takes precedence over everything. And that particular venture, you know, when it comes to directing projects, all of my focus goes into that. If it's collaborating with Calvin Ellis for any, you know, of the upcoming books, or if it's pretty much anything else, I can do that simultaneously with a podcast, because it doesn't involve me waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I've got some bizarre idea, or I've got to continue editing for a 72-hour basis. But as far as I know, this is the first time John Constantine has come across the House of Mystery. I've known that there was a backstory kind of House of Mystery thing going on way back into, I want to say at the very least, the 70s. It could go back to the 60s. I bought a bunch of back issues. I haven't gotten into them yet because, again, very busy. But I plan on eventually doing so. And if I'm not mistaken, the House of Mystery plays a very big role in the DC multiverse, especially the dark side of the DC multiverse, as the issues continue. So definitely pay attention to that. It's not a coincidence that everyone's being brought particularly to this house. It's a slight reveal here. I'll say it's a spoiler, so I'll give you a couple seconds to go over. I'm going to say a particular word that is a mixed genetic fruit. When I say that word, that's when the spoiler begins, and it ends when I say the word again. It's probably going to be about 30 seconds long. Tangelo. Yeah, apparently, Dead Man is incorporeal. Incorporeal, however you want to say it. It's probably the second way to say it. I didn't know that. For some reason, I guess just because of the medium, I assumed he was, excuse me, solid like everyone else. But it makes sense. He's a ghost. He can possess people. Why would he be solid and then unsolid? As if he was a reverse ghost dad. That's right. Another reference to Bill Cosby's highly underrated movie, Tangelo. So we're inside the house. And as I said, you know, these strands are coming all together. And you're seeing, you know, the prerequisite infighting that you would get with any, I guess, friendly reunion, family reunion, however you want to look at it, the typical ones. And the plan is being laid out to the group. Some manifestations occur because, you know, it is the House of Mystery. And as information gets relayed from Madame Xanadu, the impromptu leader of this ragtag group of, let me stop knocking me out. This group of desperate souls, she starts having a bit of a conniption. The reasons why, you know, won't necessarily be spoiled. But I guess saying this next part kind of spoils it a little bit, but it's important to note. This particular issue, this is issue 6, it leads directly into iVampire number 6. We won't be going into that particular series on this podcast, However, two things. First, go buy the series. Seriously, it's amazing. It's good. Actually, I've noticed when you say that, a lot of people think the opposite. So I'm going to say it's freaking horrible. It is the flipping worst thing I've ever read in my life. Now when you go read it, you'll be like, oh, wow, that wasn't that bad. You won't think it's great. You'll be like, oh, yeah, that was actually good. Because you'll think I said it was bad. It's how your brain works. Even though you heard me say all this, trust me, you'll end up hating it. Secondarily, who knows? There may be another podcast coming your way. Am I doing too much? Yes, perhaps, but, you know, I don't have any children or mortgages or any of the kinds of things that other people have to go through. I live a very convenient American life. So, thank you, forefathers. Thank you very much. There was a particular theme, and there always will be, obviously, for all these issues, but this particular one, the theme was dreams. More specifically, nightmares. Now, okay, I guess it's pretty much the same side of the coin. A dream that is very lucid and bright and comforting to one person could be very jolting and disheartening to another and could be seen as a nightmare, and vice versa. A dream that's very dark and distant and devoid of sanity could be seen as a nightmare to some, and to others, a very welcome respite to the silliness of reality. That being said, I'm going to largely quote one of the greater aspects of the internet, one of the holy triumvirate. Only two shall be named, thusly, because only two have been named on this podcast, and the third shall never be. The first being Google, all-powerful, almighty, digital brain that is Google, and Wikipedia. Although you would think the brain would be Wikipedia. Wikipedia is just the part of the brain that is your accumulated knowledge, accumulated knowledge that leads to wisdom, whereas Google is the entire brain, so you have memories that you don't want, memories that you do want, things you didn't know that you knew, things that you absolutely did not know, and for some reason you're sharing some kind of hive mind. And I'm not even going to go down on that tangent, but anyway, thus saith the Pedia. Nah, thus saith the Wiki. That's better. Dreams are successions of images, ideas, emotions, and sensations that occur involuntarily in the mind during certain stages of sleep. The content and purpose of dreams are not definitively understood, though they have been a topic of specific speculation as well as a subject of philosophical and religious interest throughout recorded history. The scientific study of dreams is called oneirology. Just look that up. O-N-E-I-R-O-L-O-G-Y. Oneirology. Oneirology. It just seems like oneirology is the wrong way to say it. That's just breaking it up. Oneiron is dream in Greek, and logia is the study of, so, you know, dream, the study of dreams. Apparently, the current research seeks correlations between dreaming and current knowledge about the functions of the brain, as well as understanding of how the brain works during dreaming, as pertains to memory formation and mental disorders. The study of oneirology can be distinguished from dream analysis in that the aim is to quantitatively study the process of dreams instead of analyzing the meaning behind them. And then I'm going on my own tangent here, i.e. looking at a bulk amount of dreams and seeing why they may or may not occur, as opposed to, in dream analysis, looking at why a particular event occurred in a dream. That seems to be something that's subjective. Let's devolve that a little bit more, because I think a lot of people say subjective and objective, and they may or may not know what that means. I don't mean to be condescending, but subjective, dream analysis. Objective, oneirology. When it comes to subjective, it's, oh, each individual person has their own interpretation of what that dream may be. When it comes to oneirology, objective, it's, oh, here are some causes as to why these dreams occur. Not what goes on in the dream, but why it occurs. So things that you may have eaten or not eaten, chemicals that you may or may not have ingested, chemicals that may or may not already exist in your body that are floating through your brain. Just all kinds of interesting things going on. But clarity for clarity's sake, why not? Apparently, the length of a dream can vary. It may last for a few seconds, or approximately 20 to 30 minutes. People are more likely to remember the dream if they are awakened during the REM phase, which is the rapid eye movement stage of sleep. That's when your brain activity is high and resembles that of being awake. It's almost as if all the rest of your senses are aware, but they're not active. So for the most part, most people can't smell, most people can't taste, most people can't hear. Most people see in their dreams. And then you'll have the vivid ones where you then can hear, or you can smell something, or you can taste something. The latter two being exceedingly rare. Most people don't smell or taste anything in their dreams, but when you do, I think that's just when you're that much closer to actually being awake. Not so much that the dream is that much more real. But that's metaphysics, and let's not really get into that. The average person has 3 to 5 dreams per night, and some may have up to 7 dreams, you know, per night. The dreams tend to last longer as the night progresses. During a full 8-hour night's sleep, most dreams occur in the typical 2 hours of REM sleep. Now, think about that. Sometimes the most vivid dreams that you have inside your dream, it seems like it was 5 seconds long, 10 seconds long, 30 seconds long. When you wake up, you try and analyze, like, well, how long did it take? But if you're going to take into account your sleep cycle, which, let's just say, average people, 6 hours, because some people, given what happens during the day, 4 hours of sleep. Other people might be able to get a full 8 hours. So let's just break down the middle of 6. Given this information, technically only 1/12 or 8.125%, that's stupid, I should have just said 1/12, of your dream phase, as I said, you know, roughly 20 to 30 minutes, are actually the time is actually the time period where you're sleep, you know, actually having the dream. And it could be 10 to 15 minutes of ramping up your body, you know, load, in essence, loading up all the images into your brain, you know, making the neuron connections. And then after the connections are made, the images playing themselves out, and then, you know, the wires disassociating themselves from each other. Could take another 10 to 15 minutes. Who knows? I have no idea exactly how your brain works. Just because I study neurology, it absolutely means nothing. I'm not necessarily a Freudian. I would say I'm a little bit more of a Jungian. Actually, I'm more of just myself. But I studied more of the latter than the former. But again, according to the almighty wiki, Sigmund Freud developed the discipline of psychoanalysis. And he ended up writing extensively about dream theories and their interpretations in the early 1900s. He explained dreams as manifestations of our deepest desires and anxieties, often relating to repressed childhood memories or repressed childhood obsessions. I guess you could say as well, adult obsessions. While you're an adult having obsessions, you sick people. In the book, The Interpretation of Dreams, published in 1899, Freud developed a psychological technique to interpret dreams and devised a series of guidelines to understand the symbols and motifs that appear in our dreams. Now, you know, that's one way to go down that road. I've noticed myself, I was able to interpret my dreams much more clearly after 18, 19 years old. It was once I kind of got out of the being ruled by chemicals phase of my life. Of course, they still occur in the mind, in the body, because, you know, I'm a human being. I'm still aging and I haven't hit my midlife crisis yet, but being able to just look at what was going on in my waking life and then paying attention as to why a particular dream occurred, probably because something great happened in that day, or a particular nightmare occurred because something horrid was stressing me out, it's the correlations can be made very easily. And I believe that some people, not all, and definitely not most, but some people go out of their way to try and find a deeper meaning because the surface meaning is a little bit too frightful. And I say that from a place of being an individual that used to feel that way, used to not want to admit to the fact that what was floating on the surface of the dreamscape was the truth that I was looking for, not something buried deep within. That was a horrible metaphor. That could have sounded a lot sexier. Again, the interpretation of dreams introduced Freud's theory of the unconscious with respect to dream interpretation. It also says it goes into where, as it says, he also first discusses what would later become the theory of the Oedipus complex. I don't know how I feel about that. I think that's very reductionist. And again, I'm not Sigmund Freud. I don't have a doctorate. But I believe his own experiences may have tarnished that theory. And I know I could probably, possibly, get some flack for even saying that in the first place. But it seems as if a lot of people's takeaway from his work tends to be that particular complex, which we're all complex individuals. We can both love each of our parents and hate each of our parents given any time of day. I don't know why one individual would have one strong burning feeling throughout their entire life. If you did, you I don't think you could be human. At the very least, it would have to be you felt one way and then you now feel a different way because an event occurred. Given that that had to have been the case, you couldn't have just loved them forever. Something had to happen. That means you could then switch back. So you then would never be in a perpetual state of, as is commonly stated with the Oedipus complex, needing to destroy the paternal and bond with the maternal from a male perspective and vice versa from the female perspective. It was an amazing advancement in psychoanalysis, in understanding human behavior. I guess you would say, is this socioeconomics? No. Anthropology. There you go. But we've moved forward. Wikipedia exists. Google exists. The unnamed third party exists. You know, we're better off taking information, reinterpreting it, and making it make more sense for our day-to-day lives. You know, like how people do with religion. And so, we've come to the end of this particular issue. It flew by somewhat quick. Again, it was the denouement of this particular run. This particular arc. I enjoyed this arc. I hope you did as well. I thought it was a beautiful introduction to this intriguing little cast of characters. They're very odd. In this, I'll mention it now, and I'll probably mention it again in follow-up episodes. Justice League Dark should be a very intriguing film, which I'm sure won't be any kind of an origin story. It'll be something that kind of just occurs, takes place, because when it does come out, and I'm assuming it'll probably be like 2017, maybe 2018, by that point, the Constantine show would have been going quite strong up till then. I'm sure there's going to be introductions of other characters on that show, and who knows, other things may pop up in the television universe. And the general public would have been accustomed to that kind of bizarre way of storytelling, kind of harkening back to the I want to say it's Houses of Horror, but that's probably wrong. But like House of Mystery. That series, you know, just very dark, weird stories that clearly have the adult audience in mind, not the, I don't even want to say adolescent because it's so belittling, but the teenage audience, you know, when people are erroneously expected to just jump into graphic novels. Who knows? That could be when you jump into it. It could be when you're 8 years old. It could be when you're 28. It could be when you're 88. Who cares? They're all great things to behold. Yes, some of them are not good to some and then better to others, but that's the glory of it. It's all art. It's supposed to be a subjective piece created to be viewed objectively and then given emotional weight by your subjective viewpoints. I tried so hard to make that make sense. The email address for the show is darkercornerscast@gmail.com. That's darkercornerscast@gmail.com. I've been enjoying the emails. You know, there's been few back and forth. Some of them have just been, you know, suggestions. Like, hey, you should do this. Or, hey, you know what? Don't ever do that again. And I appreciate all of them. Seriously. And I don't say that in a belittling way, like, I take all your information into consideration. No, seriously, someone's like, hey, this would be really good. If I think it's not a good idea, I'll let you know. And all you people out there know what I'm talking about, because I'm not going to air it out here. That's messed up. And it's barely ever happened. And I'd say like 99% of the time. Yeah, 99, that's probably eerily accurate when it comes to number-wise. About 99% of the time. People say, hey, this would be cool, or I like this, or whatever. But specifically, hey, why don't you try this? I take it. I just do it. I Nike it. F it. I'm not going to say I take it under consideration. I just do it. Just, hey, you're the listener. Customer's always right. What the hell am I doing here? But trying to provide something for you. You can go ahead and follow the show on Twitter at Darker Corners with that's capital D and a capital C. There's a link in the header that takes you to the website. It's got all the archives and stuff. You know, you don't necessarily have to follow on Twitter, but it's sexy. It's posterity's sake. You know, I know how many listeners I have in total on average day to day, and then, you know, aggregated month to month, but that's not for public consumption. That's not for everyone to know. I mean, you know, unless people just really want to know that, I would just tell you numbers. It's ridiculous. I'm actually quite humbled by it. Thank you all. But I'm not trying to make people that are trying to be anonymous, because it's not like you signed into your iTunes account and then you had to sign up and sign your first and last name for every podcast. You just downloaded a podcast, you just downloaded an episode, or, you know, and do your thing. But if you want to Spartacus this bad boy, stand up and be counted, go ahead and put yourself on the Twitter account. Because who knows, you'll find yourself that much closer to the creators and the artists behind these works that you love and hold so dear to your heart, or are now doing so. And of course, go rate the show on iTunes. Write a line or two saying something special. You know. And leave a couple stars for the show. Because you care. You care. I'm sure you do. That's why you're listening. You're this far in, so why not? I've been Nick Antoine. You have been the unwitting listener. Thank you for listening. Step into the dark.